I think we have met with some of you a couple of months ago to talk about our SuperSense app. So today I want to give you updates about what we're doing, hear your thoughts on those things. Has anyone heard of SuperSense from any other source than us coming to these meetings? Has there been any, I don't know, podcasts or anything you came across?
There was a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I'm spacing out right now on who you were interviewed by, but it was a informative interview.
AppleBiz.
What is your impression of SuperSense?
This is Jeff. I've been testing it pretty extensively, actually. In some respects, I find it easier to use than, say, Seeing AI to read text on packaging, like cartons and things of that nature. I find that because it tries to do everything all at once, that it gives a lot of false positives of things that it thinks things are. For example, I was holding up something and it definitely was not money and it was claiming it was a $10 bill. And so I found that a little distracting. I find barcodes difficult to do. Other apps offer ways of letting you know when you're getting closer to the barcode, so as to be able to guide you to the barcode, to be able to scan the barcode. And so I think SuperSense is, it's getting there, but I feel that it needs a little more maturity to get to the same level as, say some other apps that are currently in market. I love the path it's taking and the community involvement.
For the people who don't know much about SuperSense, it is basically a multi-purpose app and it does document reading and object identification. We are trying to kind of take a new path on some of the areas. So on the document side, one, we try to predict the type of material you are trying to read or scan. So we have a smart scan mode that if you show money, it switches to the money mode and then tries to tell you know, it's a $20 bill or $50 bill, like Jeff said. If you show smart scanner short text, it just reads it. If it is a longer text, it gives you guidance on how to hold the camera to take the proper picture so it can read you the entire thing well. In addition to that, we are now kind of going further into more kind of physical space related tasks. So we have recently added an explore mode where it tells you the objects as you scan around, it tells you the objects it sees. We are going to add a find mode where you can choose an object like a chair or a door or trash can and kind of scan around. And when it sees the object, it's going to beep, ideally help you kind of locate and walk towards the object that you're looking for. These are things we have done in Android before, and we were the first ones to do these things, but they have been adopted by other apps as well at this point, some of the other apps. So there's not that much competitive advantage for these specific things. I think our ours is going to work much better. But the thing we are adding on top of these things is some distance prediction. We have a system that we are testing right now that can kind of give an estimate distance of what it sees. As far as I know, no one has done this yet. I think in the next month or two, we are going to release that feature. Some of our users are excited about this, and it may open kind of whole new set of possibilities. That is one of the things we are also thinking about, kind of adding more obstacle detection related stuff. So once we can predict distances and depth of the space, we may add some additional features to help identify and avoid any obstacles on the way. On the more kind of detection side of stuff, or like material wise, we heard a lot of dissatisfaction with existing color identifier apps. We're kind of doing some R&D work to figure out if there is another way we can approach it, because the problem with color identifiers is, I mean, the phone basically, you know, takes an image of what you're showing it to, and it just turns into kind of pixels of colors, and they try to predict what the phone's image pixel is, what color that is. But, you know, shading of the room, the angle, lots of things can get mixed into that. And it is not very accurate to try to predict it just from a single image of the material. So we're kind of looking into different ways, maybe kind of incorporating a way to tell the pattern as well. So, you know, it is maybe, and maybe it's like a red dress with polka dots, but maybe we say orange dress with polka dots, which could be enough to differentiate between a different textile. Another thing we're looking into to address the color thing is to using someone's hand color as a calibration. So if your hand looks darker than normal, then the image, the say the cloth that you're showing is going to look darker than normal. So maybe we can calibrate those things. This is not going to happen in a few months or so, but maybe by the end of the year, we may have some breakthroughs here. Another thing we're exploring is something that could help with appliances, digital appliances. That's also something we heard from a lot of people. We are testing different methods, approaches there. Again, this is a technically challenging thing because what we found out that challenges with appliances can are not just one type of challenge. It is multiple types of challenges that can be mixed. Sometimes it's, the text on digital screen is not readable. Sometimes the appliance itself doesn't have a clear kind of screen that it says what it is doing. You know, they just like a light goes up, off in one part of the screen and it is not like, it's not clear. There's no text that says that, you know, mode A is done and mode B is working or whatever. Again, this is kind of a more longer term project, but maybe we can have some breakthroughs there in the next 3 to 6 months as well. When I use our app or any of the apps, there's so much gibberish text that happens when, especially in the instant reading mode. More or less all the apps are using the same OCR systems. Some of them are doing a better job to make sure that the image that they are running the machine learning models, the OCR models on, are better images than others. But for the most part, they are using the same systems. And the problems for the kind of the gibberish text is sometimes it's because the material is upside down or 90 degrees on one side, or the entire material is not visible. So it only sees, say, like the right side of a document. Sometimes it is too dark. Sometimes there are other kind of obstructions to the image. We have been working on this system to basically kind of take a video of the material and then stitch that video into a full picture. So you wouldn't need to capture the entire document perfectly in any instance, as long as you generally kind of point the camera around the material and it can kind of put together a full image of the document. This is something now it works in our testing. We have an AI researcher at MIT who did a really good job. This system did not exist, so we are probably going to write some academic papers on how to stitch together images of text materials on this. We have done some testing on this. We are trying to optimize it to be implemented on as a mobile app. This is probably going to come out in the next month or so in some capacity. It may radically improve our text accuracy over any other alternative.
And you said, you know, about long-term and short-term projects and goals for this. When you kind of like look at the suggestions and stuff like that, you know, what process goes on as far as prototyping, knowing what is going to be a long-term or what is a short-term project? Yeah,
we have multiple ways of collecting feedback. Some of these are just like one-on-one conversations. We do a kind of a survey in the app. We ask when they download the app, we send them an email, ask questions. So we collect lots of suggestions and we have kind of an analytical way to prioritize these things. So when a project kind of comes up, there are three buckets of difficulty with the idea. So for example, when someone, like for example, we implemented a PDF reading capability, that is something that is that exists out there. It is a developer can easily just integrate those things. And the cost of that implementation is predictable and it is relatively small. Then there are stuff like guidance with the barcode. That is something that is, someone has done it. The idea of how to solve it exists out there. It is just a matter of using some kind of our best engineers on that stuff and implementing and testing, optimizing it to be used in a mobile app. And that could take like a month or something. And then there are things that no one has done ever before. and it is not clear that it's doable. So for example, color identifiers, that kind of a thing. We haven't seen anyone who has done the type of stuff I'm talking about. That is an open-ended project, basically. When I say 3 to 6 months, it could be 3 months, it could be 6 months, but maybe it is not possible, or maybe it is not good enough to even bring in. It kind of depends on the concept and how well the technical difficulty of it is solved in some capacity.
Is it really just the limitation of how the light gets into the camera now? There's really no way of blocking out light that's not intended for identification? Would physical changes to the camera really be necessary? Or?
I haven't played with it. I think there are, you guys know this probably better, but there are some physical color identifiers, I think. And I don't know what method they're using. I'm assuming they're using some other kinds of sensors to detect those colors. So maybe there's, as you mentioned, a physical sensor addition to the phone to do something like that. There are lots of kind of logistical complications with adding a new tool to market. So we're only right now thinking about what we can do with the camera of the phone. And yeah, to the most part, it is that the camera does not see the color for what it is. It is seeing it with all the shadings and everything. And unless it can calibrate it somehow to the environment, like if in the evening and in the morning and at noon, it is, there's going to be different light situations, not on the, say, the dress itself, but the entire room or the person's hand or some other things. So there needs to be some calibration there, because otherwise most things are going to look like, at a certain time of the day, most things are going to look gray or brown to the camera.
Since this app is already in the process of identifying colors, I have to admit that I'm kind of a clothes freak. One of the things that happens when I go shopping online is that I don't get enough description of the garments that I'm buying, not only the color, but the print. And I also have items that have no physical distinctives between one and the other. And so I'm not able to tell if the caftan I am now holding is the blue one with the geometric print or something else. Is there any chance that your app would somewhere down the line provide, like if you held a garment to it, that it could give you that kind of information?
Are you talking about color, or are you talking about some other features as well?
Color and print features. Well, colors would be most important, but print features as well.
Are you talking about in the context of differentiating between your own clothes, or also maybe when you go to store to understand what that new thing is about?
No, differentiating between clothes that I have.
Okay. Yeah. So I think print pattern, that is something in our mind right now. We may not be able to explain every print because, you know, there are all sorts of prints people use. Another thing we are thinking about with this is, you know, sometimes the solution we bring is not just a technical solution, but it is also, we kind of have to offer a new process. And maybe with the color thing, we might ask people to record their clothes. So maybe you scan your clothes and you name it. And instead of us trying to tell you what it looks like, we can try to match it with what you have scanned before. So this is another kind of approach we are thinking about, using that kind of recorded, saved clothes and then telling you that, like, this is the red dress with the cat print or something like that. The thing I am personally more passionate about is employment. And it comes from my background. I have built two organizations before that taught people coding and placed them into jobs. And that created a lot of income, upward mobility for people. And it wasn't focused on the visually impaired community. It was open to everyone. And I guess there are some blind, low vision people who came in, but I don't think I have ever seen blind people go through any of those programs. But I have experience with the kind of training and job placement. I read a lot. I hear from people a lot that the unemployment problem, I guess, is persistent problem in this community. And I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around that challenge and kind of identify if there are any ways that we can experiment there to see if we can help more people get jobs. So there are a few angles I think we can approach. Some of it is just doing the things we are doing, developing tools that are useful for lots of situations, and it may just give the right nudge or remove the barrier just enough for some more people to find employment and maintain employment. But another angle is potential developing technology for kind of specific job opportunities and really laser focusing on those very specific situations. So that is one thing in my head. And then another one could be, maybe in addition to everything else, some people may be struggling with, I don't know, like just job applications and that entire process. And I have seen kind of new startups that basically, you subscribe to them and they just apply for jobs for you nonstop. They modify your resume, they write the cover letter for you based on what you have sent them. So they just manage that entire job search process. And I know that it is something I would want to use, because that process is just very annoying and lots of websites have different systems to submit your resume and stuff like that. That's kind of another angle on the job question. I'm just like telling these things in case anyone has any reaction or any guidance for me as I explore this direction. I have heard that, for example, with some sales jobs, telesales or customer support jobs, actually the software that most companies use, some companies use, is not accessible. And it is, even though the job itself does not necessarily require vision for the most part, maybe the data entry part of it, or the seeing the customer details part of it is not accessible. So I'm trying to kind of figure out the fields of employment that could benefit from some technical investment to kind of open the barriers and open a whole new field of employment for this community. And this is long term. This is not the other stuff I talked are like maybe 3 to 6 month range. This is, I'm thinking about this for next year to 3 years.
Yeah, this issue of unemployment is a big one, and it's got many aspects, some of which are technical, a lot of which have to do with inadequate training of the people to be prepared to do the jobs that are available. But an awful lot of it is that the complexity of jobs has increased dramatically over the years. I know in my lifetime it has, to the point where a person without a lot of additional training and a lot of accessible, not only hardware and software and websites and that sort of thing, but there has to be a lot more that goes into it for a person to be able to handle the typical job just due to the complexity of duties that are required. That could be a very separate topic and could take us forever, I think. The statistics say that it's something like unemployment rate is about 70% in this country for people with disabilities, not just blind people, but other people with disabilities too.
I differ a little bit, and Jerry, I think we could possibly give some suggestions and ideas today. We do have a little bit of time. Sometimes it's just a matter of leveraging what is available to us. On the unfortunate side of the COVID situation is that it has changed the way employers look at their workforce. It's a fortunate side of an unfortunate circumstance. And in one regard, it may actually be an opportunity for visually impaired people, because many of the issues involving transportation and acceptance in the workplace, a lot of those may be able to be alleviated somewhat by working at home and teleworking. And I know one person I've actually heard say, I've been blind all my life. I'm not very good with eye contact. What would benefit me? And I'm like, well, since you're sitting behind a computer now doing web conferencing, can you imagine if there was an app working in the background that used a video camera, intercepted the video feed to track your eye motions and give you a little bit of a beep or a haptic feedback to let you know how to look at the camera, how to look presentable during a video conference. And it goes back to a little bit of what Martha was saying about, does my tie match my shirt, that type of thing. So, and these are all, seemingly very superficial things, but these are all things that have been in times, impediments to employment. And I'm sure other people have other ideas as well, but that's just one thing that came to mind.
This is John Smith. One of the things I think that you have to think about, when, especially when it comes to employment, is that, as Jerry said and Frank said, with training and capabilities, and a lot of times, I think blind people or persons with visual impairments or disabled in general can do the job, but they may have to do it differently. Where I've seen the biggest problem is when you have an employer that needs to have something done in a certain way, a certain set of processes, and is not willing to change things or allow that person to do a certain part that he does well and let another person or another person who can do a different function of it well. That's where the problems come in. It seems nowadays what an employer wants has become so regimented. I think it's made it even more difficult for us to get jobs because we can't trade off one capability or one skill for another where someone can do something else. Someone with eyes can do something well and someone who's blind or doesn't use their eyes can do something else that's well and sort of match up their jobs together. I always remember this was told to me by someone who actually belongs to ViaBug, and she had said that until blind people can go in and get a job at 7-Eleven or Wendy's or McDonald's and get that early stage working skills, it's going to be tough because right now a lot of employers want you to come in at, you know, full throttle. And for us blind people who aren't, you know, don't have the skills, it's often very difficult to come up to speed so quickly and prove yourself in a month or two or a week or two or a day or two. Maybe one of the things you could probably concentrate on is just sort of entry-level jobs to see if where people could actually just start the process, you know, get onto the employment rails. We don't start early enough. All young people nowadays, they're doing jobs, you know, 17, 18, 14, and a lot of us blind people are not doing that. So again, maybe some entry-level type jobs you might want to at least think about.
For example, let's take a young person in high school. They go out and they get their first job at, say, McDonald's, 7-Eleven, what is it, Cumberland Farms, until, okay, maybe that person's going to have to stock shelves, mm-hmm. or maybe that person's going to have to learn to use a cash register. Let's just take the cash register until every cash register in the world is accessible to somebody with low vision and blindness. We're never going to get those kinds of jobs unless you can walk up to a case of bread that says, okay, this is Wonder Bread, and it goes in aisle 5, third shelf up. You're not going to get around that barrier. It's great that maybe, okay, a color thing will say something is blue. Is it a blue striped shirt? Is it a blue flowered shirt? Some of those make a difference in the work world. Say you had something and a guy had a pink shirt and his color thing said it was red. Well, he goes into work wearing a pink shirt. Well, that might not be too cool in a work environment.
So I have two thoughts related to the job situation. The first is with those entry-level jobs in high school and in college ages, so much of that depends on finding a supervisor who's willing to work with you. Because I actually was a totally blind, hard of hearing barista at Starbucks, but I had a really awesome supervisor who was willing to take on that risk and willing to work with me. You know, that is the problem, is that for so many blind young adults, their first job isn't until they're 22 or 24. The other thing, and this is the way I want to tie it in with what you were talking about with technology, a lot of those applications that you submit online for professional jobs, they use an algorithm that screens out people with disabilities. It's not intentional, but they ask things that aren't entirely related to the job. For example, do you have a clean driving record? Do you have a driver's license? Or they screen out someone who maybe doesn't have a job history without recognizing that the reason the person doesn't have a job history is because they're blind. So I don't know if there's a way using technology that someone could work with employers to improve their algorithm usage. But I know that employers are interested. I work for T-Mobile in the accessibility department, and my application got rejected because I didn't get through the screening protocol. But I was very lucky because someone had referred me to the job and the supervisor pulled my application. But they're looking for ways to get qualified disabled applicants to get around that. That's something technologically that might be helpful. I don't know. what other people's thoughts are.
This is kind of an extension of what John was talking about a few minutes ago. One of the problems I think we face, and I'm not quite sure how to address it, is that in a lot of cases, employers are not necessarily interested in the skill that you have. And I'll give an example in a minute. They're interested in the piece of software that you use to get the job done. So for instance, if I go to a radio station, say I want to work at a radio station, and they ask me, well, can you do audio editing for production? And I say, yes, indeed, I certainly can. I use Goldwave and I edit everything, and here's a sample of my work. Instead of saying, well, gee, that's great, the work is good, the quality is good, they say, we're not really interested because we don't use Goldwave. We use some other thing, some say piece of software that I've never heard of, or even worse, a piece of software that I would use if I could, but it's not accessible because the way it was designed, whereas Goldwave works perfectly well for me. I think a lot of times you get kind of tangled up, not in the skill that you have, but whether you can use the particular application that an employer knows about and understands. And I'm not sure how to address this. I think it's one of the big stumbling blocks for blind people to get jobs.
I think there is something else, which is we may have an app that may do something that we need to do in the job. I'll give you an example. There are devices that would allow us to sort pages regarding a fax by page number, by title on the top of the page. But unfortunately, the time that it takes to sort them because of whatever technology we use is often much longer than the time that it would take for a sighted person to do that, even with the most up-to-date technologies and the most portable technologies. And if you're looking at an employer that says, you have a 50-page fax and this guest wants it in 5 minutes, you may not get those pages sorted in 5 minutes. And then you've got a problem. And it isn't that you can't do it. It's that sometimes the applications just make it physically impossible to do it within the time frame you have to meet. Employers used to be willing to let you trade off responsibilities. The last job I had before I was laid off, there were trade-off issues, and I was willing to do certain other responsibilities if people would do the ones I could not. But by contract, the union would not let them. So it's not quite as simple as, could you develop a faster app? I think that's wonderful and terrific, but I don't know if we can get around it. And even things like, can you sort the mail? No matter what I do, I will never be able to sort that mail as quickly, being totally blind, as a sighted person can.
You know the problems which the blind people have, everybody has explained it. So you cannot have a general approach for developing just one simple app or something which may sort out all the issues. You may be able to sort out a couple of issues, but not all the issues. What it needs is a specialized, you know, if the employers, the big employers like Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, you know, Google, there are certain type of activities because of the pandemic, this considering the present situation. You know, a lot of people are working from home. So something is to be developed, is a software or something for the blind people to work from home. They can work using the computer and the accessible software with which they can do a certain type of job. And that has to be developed.
For us to really solve the unemployment problems of people who are blind, there are going to need to be specialized factories, offices, places built from the ground up with the idea of accessibility in mind. You know, I know that the sheltered workshops are out of style these days, and I'm not sure that I'd want those to come back, although they weren't all bad. There were some good things about them. But I do think there is a place for employment situations that are specially designed for people who are blind by people who understand what our abilities are and also our limitations. There have been some attempts made to do that, and some of them have been pretty successful. I know there was National Industries for the Blind, and they hire quite a few blind people. And there have been a couple of other agencies that have had more than 50% of their employees who are. But to think that we're ever going to solve this employment problem in the general market, I think is not likely.
You know, just touching base about what Jerry's saying about accessibility built into the workplace. I know everyone says, oh, it's never going to happen. It can't happen. I could tell you 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, if you were to say, yeah, we could have a carbon neutral zero emissions factory, people would have laughed at you. There's plenty of them now. All of Elon Musk's factories and assembly plants for his batteries and his cars are carbon neutral. They're zero emissions because that was considered to be a priority and that was considered to be attractive, you know, to the marketing. Somehow we have to figure out not only the technology but the marketing. How do you market accessibility as a feature of a worksite? In the same way you could say that, you know, a green worksite is attractive.
And thanks so much for your thoughts. This, especially the employment discussion, was really helpful for me to kind of hear a different perspective and move forward in my thinking. Always kind of reach out to me at my email at emre@mediate.tech, mediate.tech. You can also go to our website, supersense.app. At the bottom, there's a contact form. You can fill the contact form. I receive those messages as well. Or if you can, when you download our app, there's a feedback section there and you can fill out feedback and it also comes to me. So lots of different ways.
Thank you so much. And you're welcome back anytime. You have some really good stuff to say and thought-provoking and good work with all the SuperSense stuff.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.